talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about
pop culture
that they like, and they'll, the first thing they'll say is the beat.
Get yourself addicted.
To the Pop Culture Pile Driver, get addicted to the content. I am Jason Rossi. You can be followed across all social media platforms at Jason D. Rossi. You can follow us over on the Twitter machine at Pop Culture PD, and it will instantly make you more wholesome. It will. Just try it. Watch what happens. And with me, as always, my tag team partner in the podcast sphere. He can be followed on Twitter at BillyYee2411 because he got booted out in the past. You can even see it in his little profile. All other social media platforms at BillyD2411. He is Billy D. What's going on, man?
Hey, yo.
My man. subscribe over on iTunes. You can search Pop Culture Pile Driver. Find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music. Like and subscribe over on the YouTube. You can check us out as a part of the Facebook Dork Shared Gooniverse page. That is Dork Shared Gooniverse, which we're there with Dork. You get content from them. You get content from Mac and Goo. Content from I've Heard It Both Ways. You get content from Too Long Didn't Read. You get content from Change My Mind. You get
Content great Machine.
It really is. It is just, and it's free. It's the best part. It's free. Not free, but good for your back and your in covering your chest is the merch that we have over at TeePublic. You can search for Pop Culture Pile Driver. That's a chunky and all the other podcasts we mentioned as well. Music coming from our guys over at Oh Yeah. Bill, any summer jams? What do we got cooking over there with those guys?
Yeah, so Lower Than You is like their best summery. Actually, they're all their songs are all pretty summery vibey. So go check them out. And my buddy Rye put out a solo single under Rye McD. So go check that out as well.
Rye McD is in McD's Nuts.
Yep.
Our podcast nonprofit partner, Frank Says Hi. You can check them out. We're going to be doing some pretty interesting things over the next few months. We'll also be a part of the Buzz Off for Kids with Cancer campaign. So I'm trying to keep my hair. I haven't gotten a haircut since like my birthday in January. I've trimmed the side, like my beard and stuff. But I'm going to see if I can make it all the way till this will be like, I think it's June 5th.
June 5th. Wow.
So it will be very dramatic. I'm probably the most dramatic I've ever done, but we'll see. I know no promises on that. But those you can check out how you can raise funds for that and get connected with Frank Says Hi over at franksayshi.com. Bill, it has been another hot minute. Is the Pop Culture Pile Driver pause, as we like to call it, right now. A lot of things have happened. Well, obviously our main topic of the day, we'll be talking about Scott Hall. We'll get into that in a moment. Obviously plenty of different things happen in both of our lives. Anything we should be get caught up on or the listener should know about you since aside from the other things they've heard you on, but what else is cooking in your world?
We released the bracket for PCP. For I've Heard It Both Ways, Dem Pineapple Boys, the 64 best Gus nicknames. I believe we'll be putting out some more votes today, so go check that out. And then, not really, just chilling.
There's an official Twitter for...
there is an official Twitter for I've Heard It Both Ways. I forgot. Yeah, we should have had it a long time ago. We were slacking, mainly me. But now it is up and it is running. So it would be great if you guys could go give us a follow. I was kind of hoping, a member of Psych would retweet our little poll, but they have their own podcast now recapping episodes. So I don't think that'll ever happen.
Have you ever tweeted at all their Twitters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not like collectively all of them, but individually, some of them grouped, but yeah, I mean, also, I saw, and I can't believe all of the DSG missed this, the 64 best I Think You Should Leave sketches. That seems like a miss on collectively all of us.
I don't know, though. Like, here's my thing. I personally, there's so many brackets or so many things for us. I was like, I didn't feel like we really need to do one. And then I was thinking, like, Mac and Goo doing the cartoon, Dork doing the wrestler one, which, I talked to Keith about a little bit here and there. And then... you guys are doing on, the Gus nicknames. I don't think Change My Mind's not doing one, right?
I don't believe so.
Yeah. So maybe I could see. I know what you mean, but I think, you know what? More content in the future, Bill. We just do it in May. I thought May Madness. Who cares about March Madness?
All right, I'm down.
We can figure that out. But yeah, it is obviously right now, it is the height of WrestleMania season. And unfortunately, we're recording this on March 22nd, 8 days ago, right as Raw was like kicking off. Unfortunately, the passing of Scott Hall came to light, came to the public. It was a really sad situation. And we talked we talked about him in dribs and drabs in the history of this podcast. Mm-hmm. And I think the most we really ever talked about him was in the top 11 IC champs.
Yeah.
Which is probably the dawn of the podcaster's dozen. Math is my strong suit, but my suit is not my strong suit. And neither is my preparing, or I don't even know how to really go into how that happened, but we basically had like 12 dudes, or it was originally a top 10, then became a top 11 because I forgot Mr. Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Ironic in many ways.
It really is. And we'll kind of get into how Mr. Perfect intertwines in the early career of Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, at least in WWF. But Bill, when you first saw the news, when you first heard, like we've heard a lot of times about Scott Hall. Like I think it's him and Ric Flair. I've heard the most like, this is it. He's not going to make it, or he's in really bad condition. Like when you first heard Scott Hall, bad condition, gonna pass. What was that emotion like?
It was weird because I remember him from beginning to end in his run. I mean, I don't remember him as, you know, big, mean, nasty Scott Hall from his original run in WCW. I know some of my friends do. But for me, he was the first guy as a kid I remember Saturday mornings seeing the whole run-up of vignettes and him actually being good, delivering and having a Hall of Fame career in front of my eyes. So it hurt, you know, anytime anybody passes, it hurts, you know, especially somebody who you remember from your childhood. And it was just odd because like you said, he's like the guy, him and Ric Flair, like who's the guy from the Rolling Stones that we can't still believe.
Mick Jagger?
Not Mick Jagger.
The guitar. Why am I?
The guy who fell out of the tree.
Not Keith Moon. It will come to me. It will come to me.
Keith Richards. There you go. He's like the Keith Richards of wrestling. Like there's been some sad videos of him showing up at that independent show and like getting him to do the spin punch. And that guy was just a horrible person. So like you thought it was coming and then he kind of rebounded and DDP, you know, helped save his life. So it was just really sad when you hear how he died. He broke his hip and he was alone for several days on the floor, immobile. And then DDP did a wellness check and found him. And then had surgery and, you know, I think he got a blood clot from it and had several heart, like what a way to go. I mean, poor guy. It seemed like he had really turned the corner and was, you know, heading down the right path again.
I know it is such a shame. Like this is someone, and I'm saying this and this is going to sound kind of callous or rude, but like, if I heard this like 12 years ago, I'd be like, damn, like that's horrible. But like, it was just like substance abuse, you know, drug issues, alcohol, all that. And we'll get into that as we go on, but you know, this man fought back. We saw him, you know, in wrestling events. He showed up. He was a part of WrestleMania 32 for my first WrestleMania. There's a famous picture of him and at the time, Zack Ryder, now Matt Cardona, his real name, like backstage with the IC belt. And there's a famous photo of like when Razor was in Long Island with him holding the belt. Like there's just like really strong moments. He had done appearances. He was at WrestleMania 31. He took part of that crazy Sting versus Triple H match at NWO, that kind of weird. The good back to go back now, but at the time, I'm like, well, what is going on? But yeah, it really to me, it stung. It was like the first one in a long time. Like most of these guys, unfortunately, and we've all have passings in our life, but like that was the first one. I was like, oh no, like, oh, like I don't know how to explain it. Like, I wasn't particularly like sad, but it was emotional and it just made me like really bummed me out. Like, all last Tuesday, I was just in the dumps a little bit. I'm like, oh. And like all the outpouring of love and that obviously picked you up a little bit because, you know, like people really cared for this guy.
Yeah. And a little bit like Ric Flair too. Ric Flair, I think for a certain group of people was the first cool bad guy where it was cool to be a bad guy, but he was not as popular for us. He wasn't as mainstream. He was more Southern, especially, you know, when he was at the height of his powers. So for a lot of people, Razor Ramon was the first guy where it was cool to be a bad guy. And, you know, when he did initially come out, I didn't like him because I was, I don't know, 7 or 8, maybe 10. So when did he debut in WWE? Like 92. So yeah. I was like nine. So I was still
you're not, you know, nine in 92.
Yeah, well, I was born in 83.
Happy to December.
Like, all right, I was eight. Either way, I didn't like him, you know, because he was the bad guy. But then as you got a little bit older, and he quickly kind of turned face, it didn't take long because the crowd, like, he got a reaction every time he came out. And the thing I remember most about him is he was one of the first guys that, like, soaked in every moment in the ring. When he did, I know they tried to call it the Scott Hall, the over-the-head toss, what's called, you know, the sack of shit. I think it's referred to as. Like, if it was, you know, like a jobber or a guy he was beating the hell out of, he would throw him over his head. He'd sit up, smile, and do the clap one way, the clap the other way.
Yeah.
And, like, everything he did in the ring, like, his punch, it was a little over the top, but it was
the big it was snap.
Like, yeah, it was big. It was like Roger Clemens throwing a pitch almost. It was just like a big windup, but it looked great. And the other thing about him that I instantly think of, like, you see the pictures of him in WCW, and he was a balloon of a man. Not like that he was fat, but he was, like, gigantic. Yeah. Yeah. He was, like, a bodybuilder. And obviously, he was still huge in WWE, but his size kind of blended, I think, a little bit more in WWE because everybody was really big. But he was 6'7", like, 285, yeah. And he moved like a gazelle.
Yeah, he was a hoss. Like, that was the thing I think that, like, when I first, like, I've been watching, like, looking back at some of the matches, we'll go kind of through his WWE, early WCW run. Because I'll be honest about one thing. I feel like the latter portion of his, like, television career with WCW, it's like, I don't know. WCW was just a disaster at one point. And obviously, he was, unfortunately, as well. But what you just said is so true. Like, I was watching some, like, him versus Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 10, which obviously we're going to get into. There's a lot to get there. We'll dig into that in a few moments. But you look at the juxtaposition of the two. Obviously, I think that's what made those two, because they had two ladder matches, as we know, WrestleMania 10 and SummerSlam 95. And it's like, those are two, like, you look at their bodies, and, like, Shawn Michaels always, like, he was weird. Like, he was supposed to be this transition, like, he's a smaller guy, but he's still not, like, he's got to be, like,
he's 6'1".
Yeah, 6'1", 6'2", and he looked good. He just, it was proportionary, too. He had, like, a long torso. Anyways, but when you see him and Razor, I think the latter helped because they never did the nose-to-nose thing. Because if they did that, you would have seen that extreme, like, 4+ inches that he had on him, like, a whole head. But, man, that was what made those matches special. I think that goes to Razor's point. And I'm watching him against, like, Jeff Jarrett, and you just see, it's like, he's a big dude.
And monstrous.
Big man, right. Like when he was in the ring with Diesel during that feud, or he's in the ring with guys like that. Like, just I feel like even the enhancement talent they would get at the time were all probably 6'1" to 6'4".
Mm-hmm. Like, so, the 1-2-3 kid, you know, Sean Waltman, he was a pretty big kid too.
I was gonna say he's got to be over 6. Like, he's probably around the Shawn Michaels height. Like, I would guess, but he's still obviously in that when the first time they fought, which we'll get into in a minute as well.
6'1", 2, yeah,
yeah. So, like, nowadays, those guys are like my height, like 5'10". Mm-hmm. Like, AJ Styles, I'm just guessing, is like 5'10".
No, he's probably like 6'3". He's a big dude.
No, there's no 6'3".
Right, we'll find out right now. He's 5'11". He's 5'11".
Yeah, so that means 5'9".
Yeah.
But did you kind of, you know, get into this whole, you know, his career? Obviously, there's some extreme highlights. You know, just, you know, as you mentioned, Bill, the vignette started everything off, I think, when it comes to a massive audience. He was obviously in AWA, WCW. He was the Diamond Stud. That's where a lot of his moves, I think it wasn't called the Diamond Cutter, but I think it was like the Diamond Edge was what now is or became the Razor's Edge. But funny,
a little bit like Sheamus with his moveset. At the time, he had the complete moveset. He had like all the Bret Hart moves. He had the Russian leg sweep. He had the inverted atomic drop. Like, he could do a little bit of everything, and his matches were, you know, I'd say a little Sheamus-esque, where they just had a flow to them.
I was trying to come up with who is the guy that most relates to, like, a Razor Ramon. Obviously, Razor Ramon, I think it is. Obviously, there's Damian Priest, who's like a newer guy, but he's kind of like trying to be Razor Ramon, which is fine in a degree. But, like, I think it is Sheamus, because, like, Sheamus obviously he's a multi-time world champion, but you're not really looking at him like a world champion. He's kind of been that.
He's, like, a transitional champion usually.
Yeah. And he was like a top, like, there was the one shot he had there at WrestleMania 28 after beating Daniel Bryan, where he gave him like a real face run. But, like, he's really always been like an upper mid carder. I think he's like as noticeable as any wrestler there is today. Mm-hmm. Like, I think people know him because he's been around. He was through the John Cena era to the modern era. He looks good. He's always had a cool look. So I think there's
very colorful. He's a very colorful character, much like Razor was. Had that kind of unbelievably hot start. And I know that Razor never won the WWE title like in his first run when he was there. But at the time, the Intercontinental title picture was, if not, it was always a better wrestled match. Like, that's where the top wrestling talent was at the time. And especially when Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels were competing for it, like, that was, to me, my favorite stuff to watch usually.
Yeah, because I think what they did, and by the time he was IC champ, like, they made that transition, though, as a post-Hogan. But, like, I know what you mean. Like, the thing with the IC title just meant a lot more. Like, it was equally interesting, at least, you could say, to the world title, especially at that time. But as we can get into it here, so the vignettes went for about, like, 3 months. which were just awesome. You could watch them today, and you'd be like, why do we not get more of this? Like, this is so good. And it's funny. And obviously, people at the time probably thought this is a joke. This guy's a complete crock. But the reason is he kind of adapted. He went from just Scott Hall to adapting the Scarface. You know, they went into, you know, obviously all of his catchphrases. And that's where the character Razor Ramon came from. The vignettes. Then he actually debuted. And this is a funny fact. I looked this up. He debuted against Carmella's dad.
Yeah, I saw that. Somebody tweeted it out.
Yeah, Paul Van Dale on Superstar. So that was, and this is another thing. I think this is why Razor Ramon to us, being at that time frame, like 8-9 years old, is so vital, because we watched him on vignettes. Then you saw him debut on those, like, even if it was today, like Monday Night Raw or whatever. But he was facing, like, punching bags, jobbers, enhancement talent, whatever you want to call them, for like a few months. So it really built up the move set. You got to know his things. That's a big issue I see in wrestling today. It's like you debut a guy and he's just beating a guy that you drop down the card, which is foolish, because then it's like you're not really establishing it. Or if it's like a competitive match, like, I don't want that.
The last guy I really remember getting jobber matches to build him was post Wyatt family, Strowman.
Strowman did it. They're doing it with a guy almost now, a little bit. They did it really well with Ryback back in the day. He might have been the best example. He did like 4 months of just beating dudes. But yeah, so that's where obviously we get Razor Ramon. Now, here's where it's really funny. I was looking at this and I did a bunch of research in a 38-minute time span last night, Bill. The Ultimate Warrior basically shifted a lot of things when it came to Razor Ramon. What I mean by that, so the Ultimate Warrior was originally supposed to be in that 92 or 91 Survivor Series. It was supposed to be Ric Flair and Ric Flair and Razor Ramon versus Macho Man and Ultimate Warrior. Then at Royal Rumble, it was supposed to be Bret Hart versus the Ultimate Warrior, which would have been a great way to really make Bret Hart like a huge next level champion. Ultimate Warrior quits the company at that SummerSlam around there, or in between, holds him up for money, whatever happened. So Ric Flair, Razor Ramon versus Macho Man and Mr. Perfect, who comes off his Lloyd's of London deal, which that was a whole thing. They have their match. Then at the Royal Rumble, they kind of hotshot Razor into that title match versus Bret Hart, which, again, if you go back, what a really well done early in his, like, because he was never known as a technical wrestler, especially at this point. Bret Hart could carry a match with anybody. It's like Kota Ibushi versus a blow up doll. But that was a really excellent match between.
Even think Scott Hall was injured in that match too. Like, he was playing on like some sort of injury. I remember that from like a Bruce Pritchard podcast.
Makes sense. Honestly, like, especially those days, like, those guys were, they were traveling across the world all the time. That's another thing that's really fascinating. He had his WrestleMania debut against Bob Backlund in I still think WrestleMania 9 is one of the most odd WrestleManias of all time.
Is that the Vegas outdoor one?
Yes. I love that part of it. I just feel like that card is bizarre as hell. You have just the most random match.
Giant Gonzalez versus Undertaker, Tatanka, I believe, versus Shawn Michaels is the opening match.
Yeah. Yep. Which was originally supposed to be Marty Jannetty versus Shawn Michaels, but Jannetty also with a guy with a lot of demons, we could just say.
Yeah, Hogan wins the title after Bret Hart loses the title to Yokozuna.
Very
wild. Wild.
Yeah. So as you mentioned earlier, like, he was a cool character. People started to recognize that. So then when Raw started to like become a bigger show, it was, you know, him versus the Kid. And that's when the famous moonsault to the 1-2-3. Razor Ramon gets PO'd. The Kid runs out. He becomes the 1-2-3 Kid. They kind of have an ongoing little feud for a few months. And then who gets thrown into it? Ted DiBiase. Bill, would you say Ted DiBiase a top 10 heel of all time?
I would say top 3.
So how do you make somebody a babyface that was a heel? get a guy with bigger heat. So DiBiase enters it, basically calling like Ramon a joke. I think the 1-2-3 kid beat Ted DiBiase in one round as well.
Just real quickly on that 1-2-3 kid thing, that's one of my most vivid memories of wrestling as a kid, 100%, because I thought, you know, Razor was the man. 1-2-3 kid kind of had the gimmick where they were changing his name every week, and that was even a joke in the match. And, you know, he goes to, you know, he's beating the crap out of him. He's doing the sack of shit, throwing him over the head, just punching this, like, just beating the crap out of this kid. And then he hits him with the moonsault out of nowhere. And Scott Hall does one of the greatest sells on it of all time. Gets up, can't believe it. Then they have the match for $10,000, which is an amazing match because he's like, nobody beats the bad guy. He comes in, does it again, takes the money, runs, gets out of the building, like, pulls off in a car. Like, that was, to me as a kid, like, at that point, I knew wrestling was fake, but I was like, that was awesome. And it gives you that, like, little sense of, like, is it real? Is it not real? Like, that to me was one of the best things as a kid in professional wrestling. It was in that, whatever, the United Center, whatever that little arena they always had Raw in. It was awesome.
With the ICO Pro banners. Gotta get me some of that. But yeah, that was just, and again, great storytelling. Razor was involved with it. And again, nowhere near any main events, nowhere near even mid-card titles, just a great middling feud again. Then goes into the feud with the Million Dollar Man. They have their blow-off. I think DiBiase's last actual wrestling match in WWF against Razor Ramon at that year, SummerSlam. And then we start to turn things up. This is when, you know, Shawn Michaels does what he always does, just tosses belts to the side because he doesn't want to lose them. So Razor is in the IC tournament, eventually goes to the finals. And I remember this match too. It was him versus Rick Martel. And
great match.
I loved Rick Martel as a kid because I hated him, right? Like, he was another one of those guys that, like, I despised. He was a
arrogance.
He was a great heel. And yeah, exactly. And he, well, that was still a weird feud, but a great match or a great story. But here he is. And you, I actually thought, like, oh, they're going to probably go Rick Martel. Just, I remember in my head being like, Razor Ramon's not like a title guy. Mm-hmm. Wins his first IC title. What does this lead to? The return of Shawn Michaels, WrestleMania 10. Two belts go up. First ever WWF televised, don't ask Bret Hart, a televised ladder match. And it is for the, I guess you could say, like, the rightful owner. And we've seen this so many times since.
Yeah, real champ, fake champ.
Yeah, both IC title belt. Like, very cool story here. And this belt at WrestleMania 10, we both love. Like, it's so watchable. They do an amazing match. It is the, I did not know this, it is the first 5-star match in the history of WWF from Dave Meltzer.
Oh, wow. Not even
so that ladder match. So whatever people think of that, but that's still a pretty cool, like,
oh yeah.
No, and it's between Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon. This is like, obviously you had Bulldog versus Bret Hart already had happened, which I just assumed was a 5-star match. It was not. You are earlier in the night, you had Owen versus Bret,
which I would have thought, yeah,
was a 5-star match, but again, it was like 4 and 7, whatever. But in,
was he ranking matches at the time of Macho Man Steamboat?
I don't believe so. That's a good point, but I know that.
I mean, that match is, I think, a little bit overhyped. It's just a bunch of falsies, but they're great wrestlers, but it's not of the, you know, Mac makes this point about movie making and all that kind of stuff. Like, wrestling evolved in, even in that like 10-year period. And then after that, it evolved even crazier.
I would suggest people watch Macho versus Steamboat if you have the time. If you can search through the horrible searchability of the Peacock Network. But it really feels more of like a match you would have seen in the last 10 years than you would have seen in the previous 20 years. Mm. So, or maybe the last like 18 years, since like 1920 WrestleManias. But then, like, that's what I think why it got so much hype back then. Because there was nothing like it. It was like pinfall, 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 crazy moves, pinfall. Like, it was really good. It just,
and it was also, they never usually put Steamboat versus Macho Man. It was usually those guys fighting someone to make somebody else look better.
Correct. So going back to this, though, yeah, this match, dude, had it all. Shawn Michaels, this was a star-making.
Even the entrances, both of their entrances are iconic.
Okay, so we got to stop down on the coolness of Scott Hall and Razor Ramon.
This is amazing. As he says, he oozes machismo.
So yeah, oozes machismo. The toothpick,
the bad guy,
the bad guy. Everything about him was awesome. But this entrance, when he slowly creeps under the ladder and turns, it is a great gif. That's to this day. It is just awesome to watch. Like, Shawn Michaels does the little, like, he, like, almost like he's a receiver trying to outdo a cornerback to go around it. The entrance office is at Madison Square Garden, which makes obviously the iconicness kind of raise a little bit. But man, that entrance when Scott goes under there, awesome. And then also the razor's edge, like from the ladder, awesome spot.
Yep. And the other quick things about Scott Hall and what made him so cool, you go and watch his entrance from the moment he steps out. He's got a little something in almost every step that he does, whether right when he comes out, he does like the hands to the side, or like as he's walking down, he flicks a little bit of the hair. He'll flick the toothpick at you, gets in the ring. He has a bunch of little like idiosyncrasies when he gets in the ring too. It's like he goes like puts his fists up and like punt, like just like kind of like stomps on the ground, and then puts his arms straight out. Like everything about him was like, look at me from the set. Like once he walked, like by the time he got into the ring, you're like, all right, this guy's the man. He doesn't even need to do anything.
They always say Randy Orton, no wasted motion. I'm not going to put Scott Hall in that category, but everything he did, especially during this era, even like when he came in, when he became
a baby,
and the sparklers behind him, like all those little things, like he just, the package was so damn good. And he was so good at buying fully into this character and in a way, maybe becoming this guy. After his ladder match with Michaels, he went into a feud with Diesel. This, we talked about like with that height, that's when you realize like, oh, because Diesel debuts and you're like, this dude's a giant. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, well, Scott Hall's like almost at his nose. Like, wait a second. And so that goes in. He goes into that feud as the IC champ, loses the belt to Jarrett at the Rumble, has a rematch with Jarrett. Another weird WrestleMania is 11. Kind of like oddly incredible what happens in there. But he actually technically beats him as the Road Dogg debut era. So there's a DQ. Gets the rematch versus Shawn Michaels, Bill, at that year's SummerSlam. Again, This is the and if you've listened to Richard podcast, you know about
they're not allowed to use the ladder as a weapon.
They were no, and they find that out day. I think it was like not moments before, but like day of that match.
Morning of, their, like how everything happens in the WWE. Like, know what? We can't use the ladder as a weapon. All right, that's a great match.
It really, some people debate it's better because of that, because they never use the ladder as a weapon. So it's really a match, but then the structure of the match is to get to the top, right? Mm. So like there's a different nuance to it, where the first one, they're like using the ladder as a weapon. They're bumping all, Shawn Michaels is bumping like a maniac on that ladder. 10. I will always, 10 is the best.
Oh yeah.
The original will always beat the sequel, I believe in most cases, but this is a great match. And it gets, again, it's like 4 3/4 stars. So it's almost a 5-star match.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with usually the original is a little bit better. I mean, and I think of the iconic matches that have had great rematches like Stone Cold versus Bret Hart. I actually like the Survivor Series match way better than his WrestleMania match.
It's the match that WrestleMania
has a cooler ending in WrestleMania.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. The aura of it, the double turn, Shamrock, the blood. But yeah, that Survivor Series match is incredible. Mm-hmm. And then this is where like things kind of get, you know, the end of Razor's run. And I think this is another thing that's special about Razor, Bill, is that he only really had about a 4-year run in WWF. So I always think the short of the run in a way is
more like Stone Cold.
We've talked many times. But he basically,
if you're around long enough, you, whatever the Batman quote is, you become the villain
or you become stale. And we talked about Sheamus earlier, and I love Sheamus, but he has career, and it's just inconsistent storytelling. No one's caring for Sheamus. Like back in these days, there was only like really 20 wrestlers that are like worthy of stories, because there was a lot of, you know, jobbers or guys that are like really being built for the future. So it was, I don't want to say easy. And there was what, 2-3 hours of programming a week, including your house shows that nobody, you know, that people actually went to. But here's the thing. Razor actually set the record when he beat Dean Douglas for a fourth time being an IC champ in 1996. So there was a huge push for him there. That was a, you know, a record-setting moment. I remember that being talked about, because that's when Sean basically gave Dean Douglas. So Dean Douglas was technically an IC champ for like an hour. Mm-hmm. And then he had that brief feud with Goldust, and there's a lot of bat behind the story scenes there, because that's the famous kiss. And then he was like, I ain't doing this. Mm-hmm. I ain't into that. I'm quoting something here. He said, I ain't into that girly-ish.
Yep.
So who did they segue it to? Ahmed Johnson, which there's a whole other backstory of Ahmed Johnson and his wild history. But yeah, so originally it was supposed to be at WrestleMania 12. We got that Hollywood backlot brawl. It was supposed to be Razor versus Goldust, which I think would have been a really nice match, like a incredible story there. But Razor says, so he tells Vince, I'm leaving. Roddy comes in for that match, and Razor is never seen on television again. He basically just like done. As soon as he said that, he was, I'm out. And Vince and booking just said, we'll take him off. We'll let him do house shows, go job. I think he lost to Goldust on a run. And then it comes down to Bill, the famous curtain call.
Yeah. I mean, I was Madison Square Garden. That's when I believe him and was it Scott Hall, not Kevin Nash, were leaving the company. They broke character. Everybody got pissed. I think Triple H got his run. Like he was supposed to win the King of the Ring that year, right? And they made him job out.
Yeah. So Shawn Michaels faces Diesel in the main event cage match. Earlier in the night, Triple H, or Hunter Hearst Helmsley at the time, fought Scott Hall. So they both like booked their way to face each other. That's how they wanted to go. The famous story is, can we do this? Vince wasn't there. They got the approval to go out. They're all hugging. You know what's random? There's so many videos that you would be like, oh, you'll never see that. You'll never see that. Somehow this footage, it's not clear in any way, obviously. It
was no, like, but I've seen the footage, yeah.
We've all seen it, but like there's so many things that you just never, some things I don't want to see, I'll be honest, but like we're just talking reality here, Bill. In the era of, this was 1996. People were filming somehow on a camcorder. Like, it's just wild that there isn't more stuff like this. But yeah, that's famous. That got out. People say to this day, Jim Cornette believes it's the breaking of kayfabe. That was the death
Pretty much
at that moment.
But even, you know, everybody knew it was fake. At that point, in 96, everyone knew it was fake.
Yeah. But it was just like nobody, you don't see things like that where faces and heels are hugging and clapping.
They still kept up the kayfabe. But yes, you know, you know, if you watch all those documentaries, like the secret was out, like, you know, what's his name already got punched in the face by the wild man there.
Oh, yes. I thought you were talking about even like Shawn Michaels when he got attacked and like they were in the car with Bulldog.
Oh, yeah.
Another one. Shawn Michaels is always somehow involved. It was a big problem. But that basically changed the game. So then, Bill, a few weeks later, I know for a fact I didn't watch a lot of WCW. I watched the first hour of WCW, then I'd watch Raw. Mm-hmm. That was my like viewing habit.
Oh yeah, that was everybody's.
Especially in the later years. But for me, I didn't know Scott Hall debuted. I just remember a classmate of mine saying, "Hey, did you see Razor Ramon was on Nitro or something like that?" And I'm like, "No, he wasn't. Like he's in WWE. Like you didn't think like that as a kid." Mm-hmm. And that's the famous when he hops the barrier during a match, by the way, which is really hilarious. You know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. Famous promo that basically set the wrestling world, the business side of wrestling, ablaze. And that's when everything shifted. That's when WCW became must watch because you're like, what is happening? You know, there's a lawsuit.
The original invasion. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was the lawsuit by WWF saying he's looked because he had the little thing like, I don't know.
Oh my God. That's another thing. Yeah. The little, almost like a flavor saver for your forehead.
That's a good way to put it. And they basically were saying, hey, he's playing Razor Ramon. He's not, even though he didn't even say his name at this point. And that's when they decided to go with their real name, Scott Hall. Kevin Nash debuts 3 weeks later. And they were.
And we get fake Razor. That's fake.
Then WWF has the idea to go, well, we own the IP of these characters. So let's debut a new Razor Ramon and a new Diesel. And as a kid, I knew something, like, I'm telling you, maybe I wasn't the most intelligent kid. You can think, joke about
it. Oh, we were too old. We were in middle school.
I was 11 years old. And I remember being like, that's not him, but is it him? Like, I just remember, like, first time, the very first, the Diesel one, I had no, I'll be honest, thought it was him with the glasses. Really? I'm like, yeah, when you first, yeah, I'm impressionable mind, I'm an idiot, just a kid. But like then I remember once Razor Ramon took off.
Oh, he's fat.
And he was just like what I probably look like now. Like a little bit of that. Like, no, his body was like weird. He was like full fat. Like I have like melty ice cream fat. Like it's trying to go away, but it just won't. This dude was just like plump. Rick Bogner,
he was, I believe. Thick.
Yeah, he was. And then I'm like, that's not him. And then he spoke and I'm like, nope. And then when they went to Diesel, he spoke and I'm like, what is happening? And Jim Ross was like a heel. It was really weird. Horrible idea. But the bonus to Scott Hall, it does in. Guy made like another $1 million.
Really?
Talked about in a shoot because they re-up because WCW also thought that they were going back because it was a tease. Like Jim Ross was like, I got Razor Ramon and Diesel come back next week. So then WCW went to them and like, hey, here's more money. You're not going anywhere. And they're like, what do you mean?
Man, WCW's morons then. Jesus. Well, clearly. Yeah, I mean, they paid everybody way too much money. Yeah. I think people were still collecting like years after. That's why, Kevin Nash didn't come back for, like, 4 years.
Yeah, it was a year. There was almost, yeah, it was a year, almost a year, because he let his full contract run out.
Oh, yeah, they paid him like Bobby Bonilla money.
Phil Goldberg collected, they went down the week before WrestleMania 2001. Goldberg debuted the week, the night after WrestleMania 19 in 2003. He collected for 2 years.
Unreal.
It really is. But anyway, so that obviously starts off the Bash at the Beach. Then obviously this is when things really get dark for Scott Hall, because this is where the personal demons come out. This is when his alcohol, they play it into his character at one point, which is really like sad. You can Google that.
Oh, yeah. They're like in WWE too.
No, well, WWE did later, but this is like, not to say that that was right, but this is like in the height of him, like all of his friends kind of been like, hey, we got to get through this. And then like they use it as a story, which I like blending some reality, but this is where it's like, no, this dude,
too much.
You got to get this guy out of here. And unfortunately, like he got divorced from his wife, which is a random story. He divorced his wife. They got remarried, then divorced again.
Yeah, I saw that on Wikipedia.
Yeah. So, Bill, listen, there's a, you, if you can play one, you want to yo-yo that. I think it's just one and done. But yeah, this is where, like, obviously the alcoholism, all these issues. And I actually watched an interview with him. And I thought a lot about, like, I guess us, in a sense, like our friends and stuff. Now, people can partake in whatever you want. Some people used to call it the devil's, what do people call weed? The devil's.
Devil's grass.
All right, devil's grass. Now people call it God's grass, because I think people have come to realize that it's actually natural from the earth. And there's a lot worse things out there, right? Mm-hmm. So Scott Hall recently was talking, this might have been a few years ago, talking about his demons. And he says, wrestlers today, he's like, kids today, he's like, when are playing video games, right? And that's become like a weird criticism, like The Undertaker criticized people. But Scott Hall said it this way, and I found it interesting thinking of like our generation to a degree, because he's obviously older than us, died at 63. He said when he was a kid, there was Pong. It was a kind of like a boring game. Yeah. He's like 10, 20 years later, there's like Mario. There's, well, not that much later, but you know what I mean? There's Mario, then becomes like N64, all that. And he's like, these are like very interesting and fun things. Like when I, so like when we're the boys in the back, all we did was pop pills, drink alcohol, take drugs. That's all there was to do. He's like, now these people, like he's like wrestlers in just entertainment, like, when you're done, instead of like abusing pills because your body hurts, you can like go on a very nice, relaxing chair and play video games. Yeah. It's like, Chugs. Those guys aren't going to die like or get in the issues we do. Where The Undertaker, it's funny, the judge, he's like, oh, these kids don't know. They're not in bar fights. They're playing video games. Like, yeah, dude, look at your generation. They're all dead.
Yeah. So yeah, Adam Cole's there, you know, just streaming, playing video games. And, you know, same thing with Xavier Woods and all them. Like, that's huge in the wrestling community. But, like, yeah, I mean, not really an excuse, but I can see kind of his point. Like, it's a, you know, a nice way to unwind. And, you know, now weed, I think, is legal in most places. So,
well, just think about
a better alternative than what he was probably doing at the time.
Let's say, we can't compare, but like, let's say you go an hour, one of your hard workouts. Mm-hmm. When you're done with that, there's so many things you can do in your car, listening to things, all these things to kind of like unwind and whatever. When you get back, you can, whatever it is, I don't care. You know what you do to unwind, or if you have like a physically beaten day or mentally beaten day. This dude, these guys, and he said it. He's like, I would get to my car,
open up my book.
Yeah, that's true. But he just like, there would just be pills ready for him all the time, and drugs and alcohol. And he'd take all these pills, then go out to drink with the boys. He's like, it was obviously an awful lifestyle, and that's obviously something.
I mean, that was the lifestyle that they kind of all lived, though. That was like the life of a professional wrestler. It was before, you know, I think DDP was one of the first guys who like took care of himself post matches. People would make fun of him for packing on ice after, you know, each
his match. Neck,
or you know, covering his knees, looking like old school NBA player on the bench there. But like it obviously worked, and you know. It's one of those things where it's super sad, because that was kind of just like the lifestyle you fell into as a professional wrestler, because they didn't have like the health care. Like, they just popped a pill and needed to make their next town and make their next check. So it was, you know, a vicious lifestyle.
And the scariest part is we were kids, and like we would have these guys are like large. These are real life superheroes to us. Mm-hmm. And little do we know, like all these guys had all these like severe issues. It's just so scary and messed up. And obviously we lost a lot of wrestlers from that. I think it's WrestleMania 7 at this point. There's like, what, 3 or 4 people still alive?
Oh, this entire match is gone.
Oh, there's, and I think it's like multiple parts of the card at this point. Like Hogan's one of the few. Hogan, Sid, Ric Flair are like the only ones that come to mind off the top of my head. Was Michaels on that card? Can Brett be?
Maybe.
Brett was. But still, it's like maybe 40% are alive. It's there's more dead than alive, I believe.
Sergeant Slaughter still around?
Sergeant Slaughter, he is still with us.
Wow, that's crazy.
But yeah, it was. But then obviously Scott Hall, you know, he had his WCW run, never became a world champion there either. And talked about, I actually found an interview too where he talked about, he's like, I never cared. He's like, I never cared about being the world champion. He was obviously, him and Nash went on the large run. Obviously, Bash at the Beach, we didn't really have to get into, but they changed the game. NWO debuts. He has a lot. I think he was like, we'll get into his highlights in a minute for belts, but he was tagged champs like all the time. Mm-hmm. But then they did like the Wolfpack. And that's when I couldn't even tell you what happened with him at that point. Because that's when
I never was huge into WCW. I was a lot like you. I would eventually, click over towards the end of it, commercial breaks, watch the first hour, which was the best anyways, because that's where they put the real wrestling on. They put like the cruiserweights. But I don't remember too much of Scott Hall in WCW because I wasn't just a WCW guy. I remember like seeing, some of the promos. Like there's no match that ever really stuck up for me with Scott Hall there. The only thing that I really remember is when they throw the soda off his head and he reacts to it and just kind of shrugs it off. That's one of the most iconic moments he's ever had in WCW. And like that's all I kind of really remember because
that's amazing.
That is the epitome,
and I think somebody tweeted about it, like the epitome.
His hair is perfect.
He literally like Bischoff, all of them are in the ring. They throw a can or like a cup of water or beer, hits him all over him. Just looks, kind of swabs his hair back, and then kind of like cockily like intimidates the crowd. Like you don't get that today. People shouldn't be throwing things, but. With that being said, like it's just a whole different world. Like amazing. The guy was probably out of his mind too, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But just amazing stuff. Then obviously returns to WWE when they do the NWO in 2002. Like, here's a question though. You get to rewrite, ready? So obviously this is a weird thing because Vince McMahon never used the IP of other people. Like he had Razor Ramon, he had Diesel, he had Hulk Hogan, but yet he made them Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and not Hulk Hogan, Hollywood Hulk Hogan. But would you have gone NWO bringing all those guys back, or would you have brought them back as Razor, Diesel, and then just Hulk Hogan?
No, because at that point they were known as that, and you would wave bye-bye to the cartoony, gimmicky days of WWE, and it was still in that kind of, early 2000s invasion type angle almost. So I think it was fine, and plus Scott Hall and Razor Ramon, I mean – they're kind of the same guy. Like they, he basically did a little less of the Tony Montana thing, but same look, same outfit, same way to the ring. Like everything he did was pretty much the same. Diesel was completely different. I never liked Kevin Nash. I always thought he sucked. I was never into him. But
the only thing about him sucked, Bill, with those knees.
Yeah. Oh my God. He's good knees. Like
or
I do.
Quads, knees.
And then Hogan, same thing. Like at that point, he was, that was his look. I mean, he slowly went back. So
I was gonna say 3 months or the night after WrestleMania, everything went right back. But coming in, it's just weird. It's almost like WWE. What it looks like to me, and obviously I've listened to tons of podcasts from Jim Ross talking about Pritchard and all these guys. But it's like it's almost like they really did want to go with like Razor, Diesel, Hulk. But like they went with the NWO thing because like bringing them in as a package, they thought would be cooler. Obviously, the WrestleMania stuff, they thought they'd have longer feuds. They thought they'd eventually get to Hogan versus Austin. A lot of reasons that didn't happen. But it's really funny to look back because then, like, the night after WrestleMania, everything just changed. Hulk Hogan's old Hulk Hogan again. Then you just left those two out to, like, dry because Kevin Nash wasn't healthy enough. Scott Hall clearly wasn't – he was physically healthy, just wasn't healthy enough to really perform. They redo the NWO. That's when they got, like, Shawn Michaels, Booker T, X-Pac. It was just a bizarre situation. But – Scott Hall gets a match against Stone Cold at WrestleMania, which should be awesome. Like when you think about it, the ending is awesome.
Oh, one of the greatest sells in the history of professional wrestling.
He's right. I think because he looks, what is the name of the move, Bill?
What, the sack of shit?
No. Stone Cold's finisher.
Oh, the stunner.
He literally looks stunned.
Yeah. He stuns him twice.
Yeah.
He gives him one and he kind of like flips up. And stumbled. Then the second one, he like, it's like an eject button was like hit. Like it's like he bounced. Like it's The Rock sells it a little too much for me, where he like kicks off with his hands and like shoots straight up in the air. But this was just like, and I think somebody's done the edit where like he like hits the stunner, he jumps and he like goes out of the fucking arena. Like it is an amazing, it's one of the, it's probably that and the Shane McMahon drinking the beer, the greatest sell of a stunner of all time.
Yes. It's funny you say that, Bill, because you know what famous video there is of Scott Hall taking that stunner is then he goes into that weird oblivion and that music that got kicked off of Twitter. Hey, easy. Don't get us kicked off. But like that literally is one of the videos that was very famous with like 2 years ago now. But yeah, so that obviously, and then that ended poorly because you did mention storyline, right? So at one point, Stone Cold ties up Scott Hall and puts him in like a freezer and then pours real beer like in his mouth and stuff. And he, Stone Cold at the time, and in his book claims he didn't know, but everybody knew. People hated Scott Hall. There's no doubt
about it. He had that thing in his mouth, right? Where like it would react to alcohol because he couldn't drink it because he was
He basically was taking, he was on like a medication, had like a system, I think implant, I don't quote me on this, but there's something he was taking or implanted that if he had alcohol, he immediately would puke.
Yeah. But like blood, like, right?
I don't know all the it's very bad for him. Like, he already been to like rehab like several times. And so Stone Cold said he didn't know, which, and there's so many stories of like, as soon as those guys all got signed, everyone's like, we got to rally against them. Like they're a bunch of a-holes. Hogan, Nash. Don't forget, Nash was a booker at WCW. Hogan has politicked his whole career. And Scott Hall, I guess, was kind of looked at as their kind of like lap boy in a sense. Like, and he just kind of goes along with the crowd. So there was a lot of heat there. Honestly, I think that WrestleMania match is one of his final like few matches. He did a bunch of tag matches on Raw as I was looking, and then just done. And that was a sad ending of his like popularity. Then he obviously did a ECW earlier, and then you mentioned this TNA run with his son and just bloated. And then he did an indie show not too long after that, and that was I think the famous like the just horrible. Like these things should not be seen.
No, and it does give like a, you know, you live long enough, you'll be the villain. Like you live long enough in wrestling, you'll get super stale. And he didn't do that in his first WWF run, whatever you want to call it. And then even his WCW run, I mean, everybody gets stale once they switch to Wolfpack. I don't even understand half of that stuff. great theme, but I remember one time we came home from, I believe, Foxwoods, where our friend played that for the entire 2.5 hour ride. And it was awful. But
with how many sugars did he used to get in his coffees?
8, I think, and like a medium.
It was bad.
But either way, like he kind of, if he didn't have all that other stuff, you would think of him, I think you still think of him as one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. I think he's about to lose to Ric Flair in the Dork Pole as a 7 seed to a 2. But he is one of the most iconic guys because he is exactly that. He is an icon. Like just like the video's playing over my shoulder now. Like he is, you remember everything about this guy. You remember matches, you remember looks, you remember promos, you remember catchphrases. Like he just personified to me what a WWE superstar was as a kid. He was larger than life. He backed it up and everything about him was just rememberable, cool, like whatever you want to call it. He was one of the all-time great. And he was kind of a character, right? He was a caricature. Yeah.
Well, I think that's really what comes. Like he was the total package, and not Lex Luger. Like the promos, the in ring, like the moments. And I think what happened over time, like we said, his 4-year run in WWE. Like I didn't even like I was spitting things off the top of my head. What I remember looking at a few different things. There's much more, obviously, if we went week to week. But he was like his growth into the character, vignettes. Beating enhancement talent for a few months, getting placed into a feud he probably wasn't really ready for. But you want to put a guy, like you say, how do you become a main eventer?
Put him in the main event.
Put him in the main event. You put him with the champion of Ric Flair versus, Ric Flair was a champion at the time, and then Macho Man, and then in the ring with them. And obviously, it was supposed to be Ultimate Warrior in there. Then, due to circumstance, he's in the main event in his first Royal Rumble against the champion of Bret Hart. That sets a tone. That sets like, hey, this guy's on the trajectory to go there. So I agree with you. I think that's why he'll always be one of the coolest. It's hard to replicate. Like WWE has been trying to do for years with guys like Finn Balor, who I actually think can be cool, but like they like make him cool. They say things that make him not cool. Like commentary was different. Also, you had guys like Like, and then you had guys like Damian Priest they're doing things with now, or even like Seth Rollins. Like, people have like, cool goes up and down. It's like, don't try to be cool. If you're cool, you're cool kind of thing. And that's what I liked about Razor. Very organically cool.
He's believable.
He is. And that was the thing. He felt like Razor Ramon or Scott Hall felt like he was that large in life. And that was who you would get off of the camera as well. And then we have to say this. So obviously, unfortunately, we know he passed, but he did get clean for a while. He worked with DDP.
I think he was clean like at the end there.
Yeah, right? for years. But like it took a lot and he talked about it. Like Diamond Dallas Page, like basically dragged his butt to get to the point of health. Mm-hmm. And like, he never would have done that. He saw what was going on with Jake the Snake, which you can see in the Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary. And Scott Hall like was like, all right, I'm in. Let's do this. And he bought into DDP, his mentality, his positivity, and obviously cleaned him up for years, which was awesome. Bill, I just want to go quickly over some of his like highlights. So Wrestling Illustrated gave a match of the year versus Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 10. He was the most improved wrestler in 1992. Which that's like, I think one of the best things to get, like, forget about being the wrestler, like to go from like, we think you kind of suck to like, whoa, wow, this guy's the real deal. Number ranked number 7, top 500 wrestlers in the PW 594, ranked 72 in 2003. I don't know how he got on the 72 no. for that run. 40 and 98 in the top 100 tag teams of all time with Kevin Nash, one with Kurt Hennig. That was in his early days. The real ones that you're going to remember here, he was the television champ in WCW, United States champ 2 times, WCW tag champ 7 times, 6 of those with Kevin Nash. It says World War III, 97. I didn't even look this up. He won World War III. Is that, well, sure. In WWF, he was the Intercontinental champ, as we mentioned, 4 times, which was a record setting. He was a 2-time Slammy Award winner, Bill, the most important stuff. Match of the year twice against Shawn Michaels, once in 94, once in 96. Wasn't that 95? Wrestling Observer gave him the match of the year versus Shawn Michaels. Best gimmick in 96 with the New World Order. And unfortunately, he was part of the most disgusting promotional tactic in 98, exploiting his alcoholism. But as maybe the most important, he's a 2-time, Bill, 2-time Hall of Famer. Individually as Razor Ramon in 2014. And then in 2020, part of the NWO.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of, if not the coolest characters that ever lived. He's up there with the greatest gimmicks of all time. Not really, yeah, I mean, Scott Hall, whatever, in WCW. But Razor Ramon in WWF is up there with The Undertaker as, like, I mean, I think he's really, like, kind of his character turned up to 11 is what they always say. That's what Bruce Pritchard says. Like, you know, Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, you know, he kind of blurred the lines a little bit there to make himself a little more larger than life. But I think it's like if you sat down and talked to Scott Hall, he might not say, you know, hey, yo, but he would be pretty boisterous, have a lot of bravado, just ooze that, you know, coolness. And I think that's what stands out to me is like, I didn't like he's not Duke the Dumpster Drosy. He's not trying to be anything. He's not. He fits.
He does. And I always thought he would be one of those guys that would be like a promo guy for somebody mm-hmm. or like he would come back and be like a manager of some sort. Obviously, there's many reasons why that didn't happen. But we'll miss Scott Hall. Incredible career. Hopefully we did somewhat justice or at least painted the picture of our thoughts on him. You can always tweet at us at PopCulturePedia, at BillyYee2411, at Jason D. Rossi, and let us know your thoughts on Scott Hall. We'll make it quick here, Bill. I got to let you know 2 things. Worst Roommate Ever, very fun watch on Netflix.
I did watch it. I will say, though, about it, I feel terrible for everything that happened to these people, but I'm not going to an abandoned place looking for a golden toilet seat with a guy I don't know and I already think it's pretty shady. I mean, she didn't deserve anything that happened to her. I don't 100% not victim shaming here. Like, you want to go do that? Go do that. But, like, people, I'll be a little bit smarter. I mean, and I've had roommates, and you can get surprised with a shitbag out of nowhere. But some of these people, it's like, what? Don't give them like your life savings and just leave it there with them. Like this is.
Yeah, it's brutal. Watch it on Netflix. It's quick, digestible. Every episode's a different one, but Yeah, it's disturbing and a little more effed up. But you said, yeah, sometimes you got to be a little more cautious. But these people also are honest people. So also, a movie I want you to watch on HBO, Freaky. It's like Freaky Friday, but it's like a horror movie, but it's not. I absolutely adored it. Finally watched it. It took me like 3 years to finally watch this damn movie. But
Peacemaker yet?
Vince Vaughn switches bodies with a teenage girl. Bill, my life is in shambles. But one thing we both have to agree on, Bill, hurdles change your life.
I mean, I thought I was going to go at least getting every single one right forever.
Yeah.
And today I'm back on the horse, but yesterday, I don't even know what the fuck the song was.
I still don't know what it is, Bill. No, I didn't know that one. I will tell everybody, it is a, just like Wordle, if you don't know about it, it's Hurdle, but it's music. You get the six guesses. If you know anything about, I never played Wordle till we started our little chat there, or text chain. But anything else, any other suggestions from your part?
Yeah, I play Wordle now, like when I remember, obviously, and I try to do it with inappropriate words and see if I can still guess it on the last one. And I think I've gotten like 10 straight guessing like penis and boob and like titty.
Mature. I like the way you, I like your style there. But yeah, check out Hurdle. I feel like the game hasn't gotten to the next level of popularity yet, and I want it to, and I want it to expand and someone to buy it so we can be more music, not from SoundCloud. This week in
the Shared Gooniverse.
All right, this week in the DSG, Dork did Deepwater, Mac and Goo did the 1989 classic Aliens. CMM did the re-release of their first debate pod. TLDR did comics. I've heard it both ways. We are doing Psych Episode 5, Season 4. Sean gets the yips, which is probably one of my all-time favorite episodes. And then what else do we have here? We have Shime Time. He be streaming on Twitch along with Dr. Joe, and Arvon D and Keith have been streaming on the Dork YouTube. So go check that out as well. I think Jason has left the building. So
I had to go pee.
Wow. In the middle of the podcast.
I literally was about to pee my pants. I'm not going to lie. It's never happened before. And I thought I could get it in time, but I didn't.
Good for you.
Thank you. Did I pee? No, not even a little tinkle on the
no calico cut.
No, it's starting to come in now. Yeah, a little bit. But yeah, check out all those guys and what they're doing. Next week, obviously, Bill, it's WrestleMania week. We're either going balls out, or we probably won't talk to each other for another 3 weeks. It's usually the way this podcast works. But we really do appreciate all of you listening. Please, if you could, leave a 5-star review over on the iTunes. Any suggestions? Anything you want to see from us? Let us know. We got a lot of ideas. I also just want to let you know, this little spoiler into a spoiler, they're going to be like a big DSG collective, top something coming out. I don't know if they've revealed it or who. I'm beating around the bush here, but I think that's when we're going to tag team it. I got to reach out to see. We've talked about this video game thing forever. I just have to do something about it. But I think that's the perfect time, because there'll be a lot of attention on the grouping. So that could be the time to hit it with that. And
I like riding coattails.
That's it. Well, listen, you get right behind. It's like in a bike race, you get behind the fast person, downwind, girl, downwind. But please do go follow him at BillyYee2411. Follow me at Jason D. Rossi. Follow us at the Pop Culture Pile Driver. Subscribe, be a friend, tell a friend about us. Let them know. We talked about Scott Hall this week. There's more stuff to come. But really appreciate you all listening, and you have yourselves the most amazing week. Bill, any final words for our fine folks?
Slap it on a biscuit.
Frank says hi.